Case number 12-5070, Theodore R. Wilson, appellant versus Timothy R. Cox, Chief Operating Officer, Armed Forces Retirement Home et al. Mr. MacArthur for the amicus curiae, Ms. Hawk for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Eric MacArthur appearing as amicus curiae, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. There are three reasons why the judgment in this case should be set aside, and I'd like to focus on what I think is the most fundamental one, which is that summary judgment was improper because based on even the limited record that was before the district court, a reasonable jury could find that the decision to terminate the resident employee program was the product of age discrimination. Wilson presented both direct evidence of discriminatory intent in the form of discriminatory statements made by the decision maker and evidence showing that the supposedly legitimate reasons put forward by defendants were pretextual. That evidence is more than sufficient to create a triable issue of fact, and the district court was able to reach a contrary conclusion only by failing to draw all reasonable inferences in Wilson's favor.
All you really need is the direct evidence, right?
Yes, we can stand directly on the direct, or solely on the direct evidence. Wilson presented evidence of a series of discriminatory statements that were made by the decision maker in connection with the decision to terminate the program. At a meeting that was called to discuss why he was terminating the program, Cox, the undisputed decision maker here, told the resident employees, "You came here to retire, not to work." To be clear, there's no dispute that Cox made that statement. Wilson attested that he personally heard Cox make the statement, and Cox admitted as much to both the EEO counselor and the MSPB. A reasonable jury could infer that Cox's statement reflects discriminatory stereotypes about older workers in the same way, for example, that in the Evans case, which we cite in our reply brief, this court held that a reasonable jury could infer from statements about people from the hood that there was race-based stereotyping going on there. So Wilson presented evidence not only just of that statement, but then there were subsequent statements by Cox trying to explain away that statement. For example, at the MSPB hearing, he expressed his view that full-time work was somehow inappropriate for residents of the home because it would interfere with their enjoyment of living in a retirement home. And he made similar statements to the EEO counselor, Patty Adams, whose report appears at page 55 of the joint appendix. And if there's one page from the record that I could have the court focus on, it would be that page. When confronted with this statement about the residents coming there to retire and not to work, he admitted that he made the statement, and then he said, well, I think that was taken out of context. And then how does he explain the context? He says, we allowed the residents to work to make them feel productive, not because they were entitled to the positions. So these positions, in Cox's view, were simply something that made the resident employees feel productive. He doesn't seem to have admitted the possibility that the resident employees might actually be productive. Same report, previous paragraph, Cox told the EEO counselor that another problem he had with the older workers was that they were sleeping on the job. Now, Cox says, well, that's not discriminatory because obviously staying awake is a requirement for security guards, but that's fine as far as it goes. But the problem is that at the MSPB hearing, Cox later revealed that his purported concern about the older guards as a class was based on a single incident in which a single guard was allegedly found sleeping in the guard shed.
And as to that latter one, did he talk about older guards?
That is the words that Ms. Adams uses in her report. Another issue Mr. Fox, it should be Mr. Cox, had with the older guards. And at the MSPB hearing, the parties stipulated that if called to testify, Patty Adams would say that she was paraphrasing the statements that Cox made. And so I think a reasonable jury could conclude that Cox singled out the older guards, either in those words or similar words. And a reasonable jury could also infer that by extrapolating from that single incident to impugn the qualifications of the older guards of a class, as a class, that Cox was indulging in discriminatory age-based stereotypes.
Can I ask you a question about the overall architecture of these claims, which is you dropped a somewhat tantalizing footnote in your brief at page 43 about the notion that under our court's jurisprudence, in this kind of ADEA claim, the claimant doesn't necessarily have to make out a but-for cause. It's enough, in parallel fashion to Title VII, that's a motivating factor. But you put in a footnote. And for your purposes to get past summary judgment, as long as this direct evidence you've been talking about is enough to even make out a factor as opposed to a but-for causal factor, I take it your position would be that then we'd have to send it back.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. The court's decision in the Ford case was very clear that under the federal sector provision of the ADEA, there does not have to be a but-for causal relationship in order to establish liability. It does not even have to be a significant factor. All the jury has to be able to find is that age played a role, was a factor. That's enough to establish liability. Now, for the full suite of remedies, you may have to establish but-for causation, but on this record, I think there's more than enough evidence.
What's the state of the world in which evidence that would get you to a causal factor for purposes of getting past summary judgment doesn't also get you but-for cause for purposes of getting past summary judgment? Not that you necessarily have made it out in order to successfully show that you're entitled to the other remedies, but just for purposes of getting past summary judgment.
I think just for purposes of getting past summary judgment, a factor is all that we have to show. And there's plenty of evidence here for a reasonable jury to conclude that age was a factor in Cox's decision to terminate the resident employee program. So, as Judge Kavanaugh said, on the basis solely of these discriminatory statements that were made in connection with the termination of the program, the decision below should be reversed. But even if the court then proceeds to look at the justifications put forward by defendants, here again, the record reveals genuine issues of material fact. The principal justification put forward by defendants was that terminating the program saved money. Cox said that terminating the program saved the home money because they terminated the resident employees and replaced them with competitive service employees and outside contractors. Now, that justification simply does not hold up to scrutiny. The defendants conceded below that the workers who replaced the resident employees were paid more than the resident employees. Defendants entirely ignore that concession in their brief on appeal, and the concession is perfectly consistent with the only documentary evidence regarding cost in this record, which is the information paper that appears at Joint Appendix pages 7 through 8, and which shows, based on the home's own internal calculations, as of around the year 2000, that the program was saving the home $500,000 a year because the resident employees were paid a lower salary and received fewer benefits than civilian employees. On that basis, a reasonable jury could find that Cox did not terminate the program in order to save costs. Now, on appeal, defendants shift ground somewhat, and frankly, I think they're trying to pull a little bit of a fast one. They articulate a different rationale. They say, well, the home saved money because we reduced the overall number of positions that were previously filled by the resident employees. But that was not the justification put forward by Cox, and no evidence supports it. Cox said the home would save money by replacing the resident employees with competitive service employees and outside contractors. You can find that in his affidavit at Joint Appendix, page 78. Similar statement from the Chief of Security and his affidavit at Joint Appendix, page 71. So that was not the justification that was put forward, and there's also no evidence to support it. The only evidence they cite is Charles Dickerson's testimony, page 173 of the Joint Appendix. That testimony does show that the total number of competitive service security guards went down slightly after the program was terminated, but the figures that Dickerson cites don't include the outside contractors that everyone agrees was hired to, were hired to man the main gate. And also you have to remember that this program included many other types of positions besides just security guards. So Dickerson's testimony doesn't speak to those other positions at all. There is simply no evidence to support the assertion that the home saved money by reducing the total number of positions previously filled by the resident employees. I see my time is short.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Sobia Huck on behalf of Appalese. I want to go ahead and start with this, the summary judgment issue, the argument that Wilson raises that summary judgment was premature because he did not get to conduct discovery. Discovery is not automatic, and the plaintiff must request it in the form of...
It's a pro se, and there's contemplation of discovery in a couple of the filings, and how can you resolve a case of this nature without discovery?
Your Honor, even if we were to construe the two references that Wilson has made to discovery in all of his filings as substitutes for actual discovery requests, those discovery requests could not, it would not be an abuse of discretion for the district court to deny those discovery requests where he has...
In isolation, I'd probably agree with that, but you have the pro se, and but then put the pro se aside, you have just, it's a discrimination case, and when you plead the bare minimum requirements of the claim of discrimination, you're going to need discovery because the whole case turns on what you're going to find about the motivation. You know, for all we know, there's an email that says, let's get rid of the older workers and replace them with younger workers.
Well, there's nothing
I mean, there could be such an email.
Well, there was nothing stopping the pro se plaintiff from requesting that type of information. But like as I was saying, even if we were to construe his references to discovery as formal requests, none of the information that he wanted would have gone to that issue. For instance, the only information he wanted was the complete signed dated version of the ESH letter that's at 8-9 that he says he would.
And then the duty lists, right?
Right, and then the duty roster. So neither of those would go to his claim to establish that there was age discrimination. And in fact, there's other evidence in the record that shows that the home did not have a problem.
Some of that was to help undermine the asserted reasons the government had given.
Yes, going back to the ESH letter that he wanted that to undermine the cost savings justification for eliminating the resident employee program. But as is already written about extensively in our brief, that document just talked about a hypothetical situation. If you were to replace every single person who is in the resident employee program with a civil servant, that would cost the home more. But that's not what the home actually did. That's not what Cox did. What he did was reduce the number of staff overall throughout the organization. There's testimony where he said that the home was heavily overstaffed. For instance, if there were 1,000 residents in the home, there were 877 employees. So one of the things he wanted to do was just reduce staffing overall, but also they did not replace every single person who was in the resident employee program with a civil servant. They went to a mix of civil servants, contractors, and people who were participating in the resident stipend program.
So folding in the merits a little bit here, our case law says that where there's direct evidence of discriminatory intent, that usually means trial. We've said that a fair number of times. And so first analytical question here is there something that fits direct evidence of discriminatory intent? And it seems pretty clear here that there is such evidence, so we should send this for trial, and namely that they're here to retire, not to work, and then specific reference to older workers. That seems...
Right.
I don't know how you, might want to handle that.
Well, the two comments, first of all, there's only two comments here, and neither of them directly reference age. The first comment that you talked about, people coming to the retirement home to retire and not to work. That is, to the extent that it's, drawing a classification.
That reflects a stereotype that older people don't want to work.
No, not necessarily, because actually the home still allowed the older people to work. They had the resident stipend program. There's evidence on the
record. Why say they're here to retire, not to work?
Because, and there's nothing wrong with Mr. Cox making a determination that people who are making an observation, I should say, that the people who have come to the retirement home have planned to retire.
And maybe nothing was meant by it, but that's the kind of thing that probably should be resolved by the fact finder, right? I don't see how you can, when you have that under our precedence, when you have that. And then the other one's, you know, obviously a specific reference to older workers. If there were in a race case, Latino workers are falling asleep, that would be automatic. The jury trial. I don't see how it's different when you say older workers fall asleep in an age discrimination case.
Well, here, first of all, it's not clear that the part about older workers was something that Mr. Cox specifically stated.
Right,
but
I understand.
Even if it was.
But we got to take it that way, I think, for now.
Right, and even if it was, he's making a judgment based on performance. And this type of judgment has been found to not be unlawful. For instance, in the Thomas versus Gandhi case, there were two comments at issue in that case, and the court noted, the district court noted, and this court affirmed, in fact, that these two comments were simply not enough. And one of the comments at issue was that the plaintiff was retired in place. The court found that that was a reflection of the plaintiff's work ethic and not his age, and because you could say that about
that
younger people too.
That was focused on the plaintiff, not all old workers sleeping.
Right.
So do you agree with me if someone said that members of a certain race or ethnic group, pick your example, are falling asleep, that would be enough under our precedents to get you to a jury, and then you can try to explain it away as the defendant, but that would get you to a jury or get you to a fact finder?
Well, I think it would depend, because on the record here, there's other evidence showing that there were older employees working at the home. In fact, Ruben Rodriguez was one of the...
Well, but that doesn't, just because, I don't think that works. If you've discriminated against one person just because you've been good to other members of the same gender, race, age group doesn't help if you've discriminated against the one on account of race, gender, age.
Well,
it doesn't at least get you some out of this, the problem of our, the case gets to the jury or the bench trial, depending on the case.
Yeah, but here, there's not conflicting evidence here. There's nothing to show that the home did not value the older workers that it had. In fact, it asked them to participate in the stipend program. Even Mr. Wilson himself says at JA 372 to 373 that they asked.
What if the statement would have been, I tend not to like older, I don't like older workers because they always fall asleep?
Well, then the question becomes, did that comment have an effect on a personnel decision?
Right.
He's
actually explaining this decision with respect to this comment, and the way he's explaining the decision, my hypothesis is, I don't like older people because they fall asleep on the job. I mean, it's just undeniable that gets you to a jury, I think. And then the point here is that this statement could certainly be amenable to that construction, and then you've got an argument before the jury that no, in fact, that's not what was going on. And you can introduce all the evidence you want to show that there was a more bona fide rationale for the decision, but it does seem like something that would get you to the jury.
Well, the district court here decided that it didn't need to go to the jury because the comments that he made are the types of comments that have previously not found to be unlawful. Even in Hazen paper, the court said that employees should be evaluated based on their merit and not on their age. And so if we're talking about employees who are sleeping on the job, that is fair to that is fair to be concerned about that. And there's nothing here to show that you know, he went from the resident employee program to a resident stipend program. So if anything,
he gets 12 hours a week. His pay is cut pretty significantly. You said that like it was not a big deal. Maybe you didn't mean that, but it is a big deal, I think, to go from a full-time job to a 12-hour-a-week pay.
No, it is a big deal, and it has significant financial consequences, and that's what that's why the home went to that program, mm-hmm. because it saved significant amounts of money. And even if we just look at the security force, what it looked like before the termination of the resident employee program and what it looked like after, which I think Mr. Dickerson talked about at JA 173. Previously in 2001, they had 34 members on the security force, 26 who were civil servants and 8 who were residents, as compared to 2004, where you had 15 civil servants and one stipend employee. So the cost savings there are just are pretty apparent, especially because there's evidence in the record that when the people who were working under the resident employee program were making salaries that ranged from 30 to 70,000, and like you mentioned, Your Honor, under the stipend program, they could only make $1,440 for the year.
One of the great difficulties on your side of it is when you read this case, the district court's just making all kinds of findings as if it's a bench trial. You can't do that on summary judgment. Did it with respect to the information sheet, did it with respect to said Wilson fails, however, to establish that defendants were insincere in their asserted belief that eliminating the resident employee program would save money. That wasn't his burden. All he had to do was establish a material question with regard to the insincere. I mean, the district court can't do that. I mean, it just leaps out when you read this case. The district court is making findings as if it were a bench trial.
Well, as to the info
sheet. There are other examples as well.
Well, as to the info sheet, that document had nothing to do with the decision that Cox made.
These are all questions to be resolved by a fact finder, and the district court wasn't supposed to be a fact finder here.
No, and the district court did not act like a fact finder. It just examined the comments that were at issue here in light of other cases which have found similar types of comments to not be unlawful. Even in the Foreman versus Small case, there were some comments about the plaintiff being over the hill or something else similar to that. And you know, in that case, over the hill or in his twilight years. And in that case, the court looked at what decisions were offered by the employer and you know determined whether those reasons were pretextual. And here, the home has offered 3 legitimate reasons for why it went to this stipend program instead of the resident employee program. And those reasons, there's nothing on the record, or not enough at least on the record, to show that those reasons are pretextual, because as we've discussed, they did save significant amounts of money. And we do have evidence, at least on a general basis, supporting that on the record, because we know that in 1990.
On a general level is a good add there. There's really not good evidence on the cost cutting in the record, I thought.
Well, we do know that in 1998, the home was projected to be insolvent, but by 2005, it was out of the red financially. So it was doing significantly better, and that's in the record.
It was doing lots of things.
Doing lots of things. And I mean, I think eliminating the resident employee program was just part and parcel of the major organizational steps it was taking to save money and get the home back in green.
Okay.
There are no further questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. MacArthur?
Just 2 quick points in response, Your Honors. First of all, the idea that the statement "you came here to retire, not to work" can simply be dismissed as innocuous because it doesn't directly mention age seems to me untenable, and a reasonable jury could infer that stereotypes about people who live in retirement homes are age-based. For example, if a private employer had a policy that said, "We don't hire people who live in retirement homes," and if they were challenged on that in court and came forward with their justification, "Well, we think that people in retirement homes, they don't want to work anymore because they've retired." seems to me that an applicant for employment under that policy would have a pretty good ADEA claim, and certainly one that should not be dismissed on summary judgment. Judge Kavanaugh, you're absolutely right that even if there are innocent interpretations of these statements, it's the jury's province to weigh those competing interpretations and, critically, to assess Cox's credibility after having observed him on the witness stand. That's not the function of a district court on a motion for summary judgment. And second, as to the cost-saving rationale, counsel said the home saved money. There's no evidence that the home saved money. Cox said the program cost $1 million. We terminated it. We saved that $1 million. That's completely inconsistent with his affidavit, where he said it was cost-effective because we were replacing the resident employees with competitive service employees and contractors. Counsel also tries to dismiss the information paper because it doesn't address the contractors. But again, counsel completely ignores the concession on the record below. You can see this, page 313 of the Joint Appendix, paragraph 24, compare Wilson's statement of material facts to the government's response at page 317. They do not deny that the contractors and competitive service employees who replaced the resident employees were paid more.
Thank you. Mr. MacArthur, you and your firm were appointed by the court as amicus curiae, and you've done a really outstanding job, and the court appreciates it. Thank you very much. Case is submitted.